This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another blow to the FBI. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, May 8th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The Justice Department is moving to throw out its own case against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Hear the political reaction.
Another 3.2 million Americans filed unemployment claims last week, down from the peak. Also, we'll preview today's April jobs report.
Two arrests have been made in connection with the killing of a Georgia man who was out for a jog. Attorneys for the victim's family call it a hate crime.
And with airline travel so severely hurt during lockdown orders, why do mostly empty planes continue to fly?
It really shows the complexity of airline schedules, how difficult it is for airlines to plan, how difficult it is to actually run a network. Sometimes it's the airplane that needs to get somewhere or the crew that needs to get somewhere.
Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney on the various reasons that airlines still choose to fly some near empty planes. Two men have been arrested and charged with murder and aggravated assault in the fatal shooting of 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery, an unarmed man out for a jog outside on the southern Georgia city of Brunswick. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation took Gregory McMichael and his son Travis into custody last evening. The arrest came after a video service this week that showed the two men's encounter with Mr. Arbery in late February. Wanda Cooper-Jones is the victim's mother.
I don't think I'll ever be in a mental state where I can actually watch the video. I had others that watched it, shared what they saw, and that just was enough.
She was on ABC's Good Morning America. A police report indicates the two men, who are white, had said Mr. Arbery, who's black, resembled a suspected burglar. Attorneys for Mr. Arbery's family called the incident a hate crime. A grand jury may not convene until next month because of the coronavirus pandemic. The woman accusing former Vice President Joe Biden of sexually harassing and sexually assaulting her 27 years ago said she wishes he would drop out of the presidential race. Tara Reid made her remarks during an on-camera interview with Megyn Kelly, the former Fox News and NBC host. The interview is being released on her Instagram and YouTube accounts.
What kind of precedent does that set for survivors of violence? Does that mean we're presumed guilty and we all have to take polygraphs? So I will take one if Joe Biden takes one. But I'm not a criminal.
Mr. Biden, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, last week addressed Ms. Reid's claims personally for the first time, saying on MSNBC 1 week ago that it never happened. Mr. Biden again denied Ms. Reid's allegations during a local interview yesterday with Spectrum Bay News 9 in Tampa, Florida, telling the TV station, in this case, the truth is the claims are flat out false. The Justice Department has asked a judge to drop criminal charges against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. A court filing said it was no longer persuaded that an FBI interview was conducted with a legitimate investigative basis and that agents who interviewed Mr. Flynn did not believe he lied. President Trump says Mr. Flynn was targeted by the Obama administration.
I hope a lot of people are going to pay a big price because they're dishonest, crooked people. They're scum. And I say it a lot. They're scum. They're human scum.
Mr. Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, but he later reversed his plea as new information emerged that he may have been entrapped. The FBI had concluded in late 2016 that there was no evidence that Mr. Flynn had colluded with Russia, but kept the investigation open. A Wall Street Journal editorial says this further undermines the credibility of James Comey's FBI and the entire Russia collusion investigation. Congressional Democrats, meanwhile, accuse Attorney General William Barr of politicizing the criminal justice system.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DEL. That's 877-ASK-DEL.
Thanks for being with us. Government orders to stay home to avoid spreading the new coronavirus likely led to the losses of 22 million jobs in April in what would be the steepest plunge in payrolls since the Great Depression. Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia was on Fox Business.
We got to this point by a completely different route than in past economic downturns. There was not some fundamental underlying weakness. We had a really strong economy. These were public health measures.
The Labor Department today releases the April jobs report. Expectations from Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, your take.
This is going to be a remarkably downbeat report, perhaps unprecedented in its negativity. And so the expectation is that we get a pop in the unemployment rate to 15% or above. We will have lost 20 million jobs in a single month. That's unprecedented, but we know the circumstances are unlike anything we've ever seen before. As we've sort of approached this, we're aware that new claims for unemployment benefits have been also highly elevated. In a typical week in the past, we would have had maybe, coming into this, close to 300,000 new claims for unemployment benefits in our country. And now, we get 3.2 million in the latest week and a total of more than 30 million accumulated since the crisis began. So, this is quite a remarkable situation.
Boy, when you talk about being in the range of 15% unemployment, all of a sudden, I mean, it doesn't even roll off the tongue.
Well, let's think about the fact that the economy was brought to a virtual full stop as people went home, and those who could stay home anyway to try to avoid, obviously, the virus. And so this is the toll that obviously has become politicized to some degree, and to some degree either popular or unpopular, depending on the way that one views that. But there's no downplaying the enormity of the economic devastation, wealth destruction, as some like to say, meaning simply the fact that certain economic activity, business activity, consumer spending, etc., has been brought to a halt. And some of that will not be recovered, and that's why the expectation is that it could be a year and a half before we see output in our country get back to where it was coming into this crisis.
You said there will be no shortage of complications wading through the reported numbers. How so?
Well, let's think first of all, Gordon, that trying to capture the tone of the job market during the best of times is challenging, not impossible, but challenging. And part of that is the fact that one of the things we measure is the workforce. The workforce, for the purposes of this report, is defined as either working or looking for work. And so we will have people who are essentially currently idled or recently idled, furloughed, if you will, and that will be something that will weigh on the report to the extent that they would not be considered unemployed per se, but the reality is that technically, in a way, they are, and they're among the people who might have filed for unemployment benefits. So that will have the statistical relevance and effect of limiting the unemployment rate growth, meaning that if we were to truly count them, the unemployment rate would even be higher than that expectation of 15% that we talked about before.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, talking about the April jobs report. Why are we watching hours and wages?
Well, for one, we measure hours worked simply as a function of people essentially being on the job. And when hours worked are reduced, typically then income falls from that. And then measuring the wage component of this report in a portion that we refer to as average hourly earnings, that is going to be, I think, virtually meaningless, having watched in the past for signs of long overdue wage growth during the economic expansion that took a long time to arrive and to some degree never did. In this case, we will have eliminated some of the lower paid jobs as a big part of that burgeoning unemployment rate, and that could give the appearance of a better wage picture than what is actually the case, because what you're really doing is measuring, let's say, a smaller slice of the workforce with many of those low-paid jobs taken out of the equation.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A member of the Navy who serves President Trump his meals and works in close proximity to the president has tested positive for the coronavirus.
I've had very little personal contact with this gentleman. Know who he is, good person, but I've had very little contact.
The White House says Trump and Vice President Mike Pence have since tested negative for the virus and remain in good health.
Number two.
Georgia authorities have arrested a white father and son, Gregory and Travis McMichael, and charged them with murder in the February shooting death of a black man they had pursued in a truck after spotting him running in their neighborhood. The charges came more than 2 months after 25-year-old Ahmaud Arbery was killed on a residential street just outside Brunswick. Lee Merritt is an attorney for the victim's family.
This is long overdue, and this is just one step toward justice, and with a long way to go.
National outrage over the case swelled this week after the release of cell phone video that captured the murder.
Number three.
In an abrupt about-face, the Justice Department says it's dropping the criminal case against President Trump's first national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Attorney General William Barr spoke with CBS.
A crime cannot be established here. They did not have a basis for a counterintelligence investigation against Flynn at that stage.
The action comes even though Flynn admitted lying to the FBI and pleaded guilty in the Russia probe. The Supreme Court has thrown out a pair of public corruption convictions in the New Jersey scandal known as Bridgegate, ruling that a political retribution scheme to cripple a town with traffic jams didn't constitute federal fraud. The decision marks the end of a nearly seven-year drama that upended the lives of several aides to former Republican Governor Chris Christie. Who knows at this point what the NFL season may look like, but the league is forging ahead by releasing the fall schedule. In the annual kickoff game, the Kansas City Chiefs will open defense of their Super Bowl championship by hosting Houston on September 10th. Another highlight of the opening weekend will have Tom Brady's regular season debut with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against Drew Brees at New Orleans on September 13th, the first matchup of 40-year-old plus quarterbacks in NFL history.
A couple old guys still getting it done.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Jets, by the way, will go undefeated against Tom Brady this year. And winless also, yeah, I guess, technically. Thanks for being with us. On the travel front, the idea of so many flights with so few passengers has left many wondering why airlines continue to fly nearly empty airplanes. It seems like airlines are burning cash, fuel, and goodwill. Don't they know what they're doing? Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says they do, in fact, know what they're doing. Scott, explain.
It really shows the complexity of airline schedules, how difficult it is for airlines to plan, how difficult it is to actually run a network. Sometimes it's the airplane that needs to get somewhere or the crew that needs to get somewhere. Sometimes they've even run flights with only a few passengers because of who they were, medical care workers or really top customers who they don't want to anger. Sometimes you're on a flight with only two or three people, and it goes out because the flight coming back or the next flight in the airplane schedule may have a bunch of people, and they got to get the airplane to where the people are.
Boy, so they fly an unprofitable flight to bring back a slightly less unprofitable flight.
Yeah,
right? Well, that happens, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no such thing as a profitable flight today.
Man, I didn't realize the difference or the amount of reasons, I guess, that these flights could be going. You said there might be a busier flight behind it, and you said, too, parking.
Yeah.
You might have to park the plane somewhere.
Right. No, this one surprised me because there are so many planes grounded, actual parking, overnight parking spaces at airports are at a real premium now. Schedules will have JetBlue gets to put an A320 in that spot overnight in Boston. And so that plane, you know, probably can't just stop in Pittsburgh or wherever it might be. It needs to get to Boston, and whether there are people on it or not, otherwise they're not going to have a place to park it. It's really amazing. And another reason is maintenance. American, for example, does all of its overnight maintenance on Airbus A319 airplanes in Pittsburgh. So if you're on the last flight of the day to Pittsburgh, it's going, because that airplane probably needs work done overnight. Otherwise, it's no good the next day.
We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Why Empty Planes Keep Flying Through the Pandemic. At this point, are schedules mostly reliable, say, through May and June?
Yeah, the May schedules are going to be a lot more reliable. A lot of this happened March and April because there was such, you know, chaos with the schedules. Airlines were trying to cut flights and ground flights, but that is a difficult process, and it took them some time to figure out, and also to figure out what kind of demand there was. And this is completely unprecedented. They had no idea. And it changes day to day, and certainly changes week to week, and is now changing because some states are opening up and more people are traveling. And so they really had a hard time sort of figuring out what the proper schedule level would be. How many times a day should you fly between New York and Los Angeles?
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, travel columnist at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now you can keep your face looking smooth too, or your beard looking clean, with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/gordon to start shaving better today.
Identifying trends and informing the world. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us, Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, on this Friday, May 8. Some of our top stories and headlines. Justice Department expected to drop its case against Michael Flynn. The House Intelligence Committee has released dozens of transcripts from the Russia investigation. Chinese media says the top trade negotiators for Washington and Beijing talked today about creating a favorable environment for the Phase 1 trade deal. Two men charged in the murder of a Georgia man out jogging. High-end retailer Neiman Marcus has filed for bankruptcy, and the man in Maryland using a yard sign to post daily bad dad jokes to lighten the quarantine mood. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Far from being the unifying force other catastrophes have been, the COVID-19 pandemic is tearing a divided America and world further apart. In-depth analysis now from Brian Walsh, future correspondent at Axios, covering topics like emerging tech and geopolitical trends. Brian, how do you see it?
When you see the way that this feels like something that should bring us all together, right? This is a global disaster, it's a national disaster, but the reality is everyone's experiencing it differently. You know, here where I live in New York City, obviously we've been the epicenter for some time. We know what's happening here, we can feel it. But, you know, elsewhere that's less the case. That doesn't mean they're not going to be, you know, under threat in the future, but it's entirely possible to look at that and say, like, well, this isn't such a big deal, so why are we suffering all this economic problems? And then you add in the fact that, you know, social media, tech platforms today essentially allow you to kind of pick your own reality when it comes to what kind of news or media you want to consume. The result is we're all looking at this in a different way. And because, you know, it demands a lot of us, instead of coming together, you know, we often find ourselves going in separate directions, and you have bad actors, I think, really capitalizing on this as well. The end result is this is going to end up fracturing us even more than we already were.
You made me think as you were talking about that, what percentage of us see this maybe as a dividing issue versus a unifying one?
I don't know if I've seen that specifically. I mean, when you look at the way that how you view this pandemic really comes down to a large extent to your party affiliation. You know, Republicans just see it vastly different than Democrats. And some of that might, again, come down to where you are in the country, what you personally experience. But a lot of it comes down now to the fact that we do view things increasingly through a partisan lens. Yeah. And so much of that's often you're negatively sort of identifying yourself based off the people you think you oppose. So, okay, if the Democrats say this is a big deal, this pandemic is a big deal, then maybe Republican-leaning voters are going to say, well, no, it's not. And the president's kind of waffling on that a little bit. And then vice versa as well. The end result being, again, you don't see the same reality.
Even the reported number of deaths, as you point out, is a point of debate.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you think that'd be one thing we can definitely agree on, because deaths are the easiest thing to keep track of, sadly, even compared to the number of cases, for instance. And yet we're seeing that, Democrats tend to think it's underreported. Republicans tend to think it's overreported. The president himself has been wondering if it's overreported. And if you can't agree on something as simple as that, that doesn't really, I think look good for the ability for us to think, okay, what are we going to do down the line in the future when we're trying to predict things? And that's always going to be uncertain. Mm.
We're speaking with Brian Walsh. He's the future correspondent at Axios. His piece is called Why the Coronavirus Tears Us Apart. One of the other points you made, too, you said even within hard-hit cities, the experience often breaks down along lines of race and class. Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you see, it's such an unusually high percentage of minorities suffering more heavily from this disease, higher case numbers based off their percentage of the population, higher numbers of deaths, ditto with people who are poor. And a lot of that, I think, has to do with, it might be the kind of jobs you're doing. Are you an essential worker? That means you still have to go to the workforce, which means you might be being exposed. Do you have to ride transit in certain cities? Are you just not getting as good health care? Were you not in as good health before this? All of which means, again, this is not something that presents us with an equal risk, but it really depends, again, on where you're living in the country, what your background is, what your daily life is like. So, again, it's not like we can all look at that and say, like, we're in this together, because, in a sense, we're not quite in the same way.
Explain the point you made, too, about how the story of COVID-19 has largely been told secondhand compared to other disasters.
Yeah, this has really struck me for a couple of times. You know, I've been a reporter for more than 20 years now, reported through, big events like 9/11, through wars, through other pandemics. And you think of all of those events, think of Hurricane Katrina, they have their characteristic images. It might be a photograph, it might be, video that someone did, where you can actually see it happen. You can see the floods, you can see the earthquake. You can see the war itself, but here you can't. The real catastrophe that's happening is all happening behind hospital doors. And because of patient privacy laws, we can't really go in there as journalists. For safety reasons, because of risk of infection, we can't really go in there. And so as a result, there's nothing to see. I mean, the dominant images here are, empty streets or people in masks or closed businesses, but you don't see the people dying and suffering. And I think that makes it easier to treat it as unreal, if that's sort of the way you want to go.
Thanks, Brian. That is Brian Walsh, the future correspondent at Axios. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday. It's time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, as we head into another weekend spent mostly at home for a large percentage of the country, it's a good time for an alcohol status report. Just days after Cinco de Mayo, Mexico is apparently running out of beer. And while the situation has caused jokes on social media, it's worrying retailers and shop owners. Beer production was halted in Mexico more than a month ago due to the pandemic and its designation as a non-essential activity. There are even reports that a beer black market has risen up, where sellers are charging more than twice the normal price. Thirsty Mexicans have taken to Twitter with the hashtag La Ultima Chela, or the last beer, trending. The good news is no big shortages in the U.S. as far as we know, despite an increase in demand for cheap beers to help us get through the pandemic, like Busch, Miller Lite, and of course, Natty Light.
Natty Light.
Yes, we'll always go to Natty Light.
Your Spanish is excellent, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really good.
I know numbers to 10. I know a handful of colors, and I can pronounce a word if it comes in front of me. That's about the best I can do.
Okay.
After 5 years of Spanish.
What kind of beer you got at home right now? Should I make my way over with a pizza or something?
I don't have much right now, but there probably will be a growler at my house, probably along with a pizza at some point later on today. I've been doing during the pandemic,
yeah.
Yes. I've been ordering out the growlers from the local bars that have been offering those up. So, yeah.
And it gives you a chance to drink 20 ounces at a time rather than just 12 or whatever they are.
Yeah, it's like a half gallon, basically. So, I mean, it's 60 ounces somewhere in that neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah, so you certainly could have some fun with that.
Right now, I'm fairly well stocked with Killian's, and Blue Moon. For whatever reason. Those are the two in there right now.
Your go-tos.
Those are number one and two.
I was big into Killians for a long time. I've sort of lost touch. I may need to revisit the Killians again.
Okay. I'll help you out with that.
Thank you. And if wine is more your thing, and we know it's also your thing, Gordon, you'll go to great lengths to get your hands on some to get you through a long, socially distant weekend. We don't, however, recommend you try this at home. A Modesto, California man was arrested this week after he reportedly jumped on a big rig transporting red wine and climbed underneath the moving truck to drink the wine from a valve at the bottom of the vehicle. According to local TV, the man was driving a sedan and convinced the driver of the truck to pull over by placing on his hazard lights. In a dash cam video, the man is seen getting out of his car in his underwear and then running toward the truck. In another clip, the man is seen climbing on the back of the truck and then underneath it as it travels up Highway 99. The truck driver reportedly noticed the tank losing fluids and called California Highway Patrol, who responded and discovered the man holding on to the underbelly of the truck, drinking the red wine pouring out from the tanker. Not only was all this extremely dangerous, but about 1,000 gallons of precious wine was lost on the freeway.
That's... What?
Where do you even start on something like this?
Oh, my goodness.
We almost gloss over the part that he was in his underwear.
Yeah, well, I did underline that on your
script here. But, of course, that'll be in court. So that'll be certainly an important piece of the evidence, right?
That's unbelievable. So I guess this is a specialty wine truck.
Okay, yeah.
Right? It is not like cases of wine that happen to be on a pallet loaded on. I mean, this truck has a valve underneath it. So I assume it's coated with the aluminum or whatever inside to preserve the wine.
Yeah, yeah. So this guy knew, somehow knew this was the truck to hit, right?
It smells of an inside job, Mike.
I mean, it's something out of a movie is what all this is. Something out of a bad comedy or something.
And so eventually, I guess the truck driver decided to drive away.
Yeah.
And here's this guy, clinging to underneath the truck.
For dear life.
Which requires some degree of strength and athleticism, I would imagine, all this climbing and holding on he's doing.
Sounds like an out-of-work Hollywood stuntman is what it sounds like to me.
That's a great observation. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
Helping you navigate the COVID-19 crisis with the facts and information to make smart decisions. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Here's a list of important online resources and answers to the most common questions around paying bills. If coronavirus layoffs or furloughs have hit the family budget, what if you can't pay the rent? MarketWatch says first thing you should do is send an email or written letter to your landlord, followed by a phone call. Most states have template letters available online through the state attorney general's office. What if you can't make your credit card payment? MarketWatch says the same rule applies with one caveat. If you have a credit score of 690 or higher, now is a good time to apply for a 0% interest rate card, then transfer balances from your cards with higher rates. What if you can't buy groceries or other essentials? You can call or go online to a service called 211.org. It's the most comprehensive source of locally curated social services in the U.S. You can call, text, or chat confidentially with a specialist in your area 24/7. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A white former police officer and his son have been arrested in Georgia and charged with murder in the shooting death of an unarmed black man, an incident that has touched off a nationwide furor. Gregory McMichael and his son Travis were taken into custody yesterday and charged with murder and aggravated assault in the killing of Ahmaud Arbery in the town of Brunswick. The victim's mother, Wanda Cooper-Jones, spoke with ABC.
Ahmad carried the most humblest spirit. Ahmad was kind. Ahmad was, he was well-mannered. Ahmad, most of all, was loved by his family and peers.
The February 23rd shooting death of the 25-year-old as he ran unarmed through the small town was captured on video by an unnamed witness.
Number two.
California, the biggest contributor to the U.S. economy, will start loosening its tight stay-home rules today. Governor Gavin Newsom says retailers will be able to offer curbside pickup, but the San Francisco Bay Area can continue to have stricter rules. Meanwhile, Newsom says nail salons have been identified as a source of spread.
This whole thing started in the state of California, the first community spread in a nail salon. I just want to remind you, remind everybody of that. I'm very worried about that.
Number three.
As more states begin allowing some businesses to reopen, what's allowed continues to vary widely by state and still includes plenty of restrictions. Many live concerts resume in Branson, Missouri on May 15th. Small schools have opened in Montana. The government is poised to report the worst set of job numbers since record keeping began in 1948. The unemployment rate for April could reach 16% or more. 21 million jobs may have been lost in April. If so, it would mean that nearly all the job growth in the 11 years since the recession ended vanished in 1 month. The Northeast is about to get a cold spring farewell from the polar vortex. Forecasters say that could mean a rare May snowfall and record low temperatures in some areas. And talk about paying it forward, way forward. In 1847, the Choctaw Nation sent $170 to aid Irish families in the middle of the potato famine. The donation came not long after the Choctaw themselves had been forced off their land during the Trail of Tears. Now, Irish donors are raising money to support one of the areas in the U.S. worst hit by the coronavirus, the Navajo Nation in Arizona, Utah, and New Mexico. So far, Irish donors have pledged more than $2.8 million.
Wow, how about that?
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. The stay-at-home order in Maryland has been stressful for Ann and Tom Shrubin, self-employed workers who live in Kensington with their 11-year-old daughter. MSN.com says Ann noticed her husband was a little grumpy. So when she heard a friend in Ohio was posting a daily joke in front of her house, she told Tom he should do the same thing. Tom resisted. Then about 2 weeks ago, he grabbed a whiteboard and wrote at the top, "Bad dad jokes." He scrawled his first one in purple ink. It read, "Hold on, I have something in my shoe. I'm pretty sure it's a foot." At 8 a.m. on April 17, he set the whiteboard near the footpath in front of his house and waited inside his screened-in porch to see if anyone reacted. Once he got his first laugh, he was committed. The next day was his second bad joke. It read, "Without geometry, life is pointless." For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.